Hello, this is Monica Reads. I'm Georgina Godwin. My guest today is Stuart Clarke, one of the foremost astronomy journalists in the UK. He holds a PhD in astrophysics and is also a fellow of the Royal Astronomical Society and a consultant for the European Space Agency. His work's been published widely in The Guardian, BBC Sky at Night, The Economist, The Times, and many, many more. Alongside his journalism, he's also published a number of books, the latest of which is Beneath the Night, How Stars Have Shaped the History of Humankind. Stuart, welcome to the programme.
Hello, Georgina. Thank you so much for inviting me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, the blurb for the book says it's the history of humanity told through the relationship with the night sky. And basically, that's an enormous remit. How do you start telling the history of humanity?
Yes, it is. And you start with a kind of naive belief in yourself that this is something that you can do. And then you get so far into it that you can't disappoint people when you realise what you've taken on. So you just have to do it. It started actually because I have never remembered a time in my life when I wasn't fascinated by the night sky and the stars. And I started to wonder, what was it about the night sky that had gripped me so completely, right from the smallest child, really? And so I started to look and talk to other people and look for written material about other people expressing this kind of interest in the night sky. And I just ran out of sources, really, right back to the very first writing. The people are talking about the connection between the earth and the night sky. This is sort of Sumerian writing. So it struck me at that point that this connection that we feel to the night sky is something that started before writing, and then looking at some of the evidence of the prehistoric sites and cave paintings, it permeates our humanity, if you like, this sort of curiosity and wonder at the night sky. So I just started to think, well, can I pull this all together and look at the various different ways our association with the night sky has shaped us and changed throughout human history?
Now, we equate the stars with some kind of spirituality, but as you point out in the book, the first uses of looking at the heavens were, in fact, much more practical.
Yes. This was a bit of a surprise to me when I was doing the research, because I suppose I'd kind of bought into this way of thinking that earlier humans were somehow, you know, more primitive, and so you didn't think in such practical ways, and so they enchanted the night sky with ideas of spiritual forces and gods, and, you know, gradually we became more scientific. And I discovered that that's not the case, that these two ideas about what the night sky means and how you can use it have run in parallel threads throughout human history. The idea of using the movement of the stars and the planets and the sun and the moon for timekeeping seems to be one of the earliest things that humans did. And as they sort of progressed, they sort of enchanted the night sky with gods and the ideas of spirits, and they sort of invented the concept of heaven being up there, you know, in the wider universe. And over the course of human history, these two separate strands have constantly jockeyed for dominance in cultural thinking.
Mm-hmm. Then we get to the 1600s, and we're talking about people like Copernicus or Ptolemy, and all of this kind of great scientific leap forward. But in writing the book, you found that far from being science's greatest moment, it actually had the opposite effect on many people.
Yes, this was one of the big revelations of the book for me. Because of the age in which I've grown up, because of the, you know, my, I suppose my natural inclination for curiosity and how do I understand what the stars are, you know, and be, just because of the culture of science that's around now, that's purely how I viewed the night sky for most of my life. But in writing this book and digging into the moments of the scientific revolution with people, as you say, like Copernicus, Galileo, Johannes Kepler, Isaac Newton, all of these people came to this, sort of defined this new way of looking at the night sky and seeing it not as a completely separate realm, which is governed by separate laws than the earth. So not a heavenly, otherworldly realm, but a physical realm where the laws of nature are the same as here on earth, and that these other celestial objects are planets just like the earth, or the stars themselves are suns just viewed from a very long distance away. And that caused a sort of a cognitive disconnect with most of the public at the time, who were used to thinking of the night sky as this completely separate heavenly and spiritual realm that could influence the events on the earth through sort of mystical astrological forces. Medicine, for example, you would be diagnosed with, your illness would be diagnosed by a doctor partly by them looking at where the planets are in the night sky to see which constellations they're in, and this would tell them where to cut to you to bleed you in order to hopefully cure you of your illness. So this astrological connection between the night sky and the earth was completely interwoven throughout culture.
How do we think of it now, then?
Well, so now what happened at that point is that you had this elite group of mathematicians or mathematical philosophers who were saying, no, it's all wrong, but we know the truth. And so that creates this strange elite hierarchy of people who are governors of the truth. I think it's only sort of in recent centuries, starting, I suppose, a little bit in the 18th, it's nascent in the 18th, and then 19th, we start to develop the concept. And in the 20th century, we have it in full force, and obviously today, and that's science communication. And it's taking these ideas that science is telling us, this world view of what the universe is, what the world is, how the world works, how the night sky works, and being able to talk about that in language that everyone can join in with. And also acknowledging that just because you know physically how something works, that takes nothing away from the beauty of what's going on as well. So I can stand under the night sky and I can intellectually know that those stars are burning because of nuclear fusion processes at millions of degrees in the, you know, in the hearts of those stars. But I can also feel simultaneously just how beautiful and awe-inspiring it is to be beneath the night.
And do you feel any kind of edge of spirituality through that, some kind of heaven speaking to you, even though you're a scientist?
No, I don't. And this was another thing that I fully cleared up in my mind when I was writing this book. It all comes down to whether, as an individual, you sort of intuitively believe that matter is all there is, that what you can measure, what you can see, whether that's all there is. And if that is what strikes true within you, then there's no space for spirituality and heaven. If you believe that there are forces that can't be measured and yet somehow have an influence on us, then you can move towards that more spiritual, heavenly interpretation. But both types of people, and I say this from personal experience because it's happened to me, can have these kinds of I'm going to say religious sort of experiences standing underneath a beautiful night sky, these moments of epiphany, these feelings of connection to this much wider universe. And for that little moment, you realize how small you are and yet how connected you are to everything. And I think depending upon your just natural tendency and inclination, you interpret that in different ways. But we can all agree on the commonality of the feeling.
Absolutely. I mean, very early on in the book, you make the point that, of course, Shakespeare and Galileo, Columbus, Joan of Arc, everybody, we all saw the same stars.
Yes, absolutely. Next to our brief lives, the stars are immortal. So you go back in history and everyone who's ever lived has seen these same stars in more or less the same patterns. And that was a moment again of revelation for me, as I realized that, that was a being beneath the night was a common thread and feeling and experience throughout all of humanity.
Stuart, you say in the stars we can see our past and ultimately our fate. Now, you don't mean I'm Aries, so on Wednesday I'll have a bad day. You mean we're all going to disappear into a black hole.
What I mean by that is that's in our atom, the atoms of our bodies, they've all been in the universe. Most of the atoms inside us, were built in the center of massive giant stars billions of years ago. There could be no life, there could be no planets without this generation of early stars that changed all the hydrogen and helium in the universe into all the other chemical elements. And that's where our atoms will end up again, long after the Earth has gone, long after we're gone. We will be atoms incorporated into other stars, into other planets, maybe even into other life forms. And that's somehow comforting to me. There's a great solace in that. And it's another one of those feelings of I'm not this individual thing. I'm part of this much greater whole.
Stuart Clark, thank you so much.
What a pleasure. Thank you, Georgina.
Beneath the Night is by Stuart Clark, How the Stars Have Shaped the History of Humanity, and it's published by Faber and Faber. You've been listening to Monocle Reads, thanks to the production team of Steph Chungu, Nora Hull and Charlie Filmer-Court. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.